Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 415, entitled Feeling Insecure with Tim Nash, episode 3, The State of WordPress Security and the Transition to Bcrypt. It was published on Thursday, the 27th of March, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I'll be joined by my guest, Tim Nash, in a few short moments so that he can freak you out about the state of WordPress security. Before we get into that, though, a few bits of housekeeping. If you like what we do over at WP Builds, why not check out our schedule page, wpbuilds.com/schedule. Whilst you're there, check out all of the different episodes that we've got. We've got a whole bunch of archive pages. You can see the archive menu in the nav at the top of the website. Go and explore all the different bits and pieces that we've got. I'd love for you to explore the Accessibility Show archive. That's also under the archive menu and ingeniously hidden inside the menu item called Accessibility Show Archive. There you go, that's clever. And in there, you will find a whole bunch of episodes that I've been doing with Joe Dolson. Joe Dolson is an expert in WordPress and website accessibility. And in the latest episode, episode 5, which we released this week, we have a look at Jamie Marsland's new AI website, which he created as a personal project. And Joe goes over it in terms of accessibility and finds out, as you might expect, that the AI is basically making the same mistakes as humans do. That is on the archives page, but probably the easiest way to get to that is wpbuilds.com/accessibility/5. That is the numeral 5. The other thing to mention is that if you like what we do at WP Builds, why not think about advertising? You're about to hear from three companies that have done that, and I would ask the question of you, why are they doing that? Well, the reason they're doing that is because we put them in front of a WordPress-specific audience, a fairly large one, and perhaps that's something that you or your company, product, service, whatever you've got, may like to do as well. Find out more at wpbuilds.com/advertise. The WP Builds Podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also joined this week by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. This podcast was also made possible by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds Podcast. Podcasts like this cannot happen without the support of fine companies just like them. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, as I mentioned at the top, it's an episode of the Feeling Insecure podcast. It's the third iteration that I've done with Tim Nash, and this is all about the state of WordPress security and the transition to Bcrypt, whatever that is. Well, first of all, we talk about Tim's background, and then we spend an absolute age talking about the PatchStack State of WordPress Security in 2025 article. We really do drill down into all of the bits and pieces that they've got there. What have they highlighted? What does Tim think is worth looking at? And what can you possibly ignore? Towards the end of the show, we get into this new thing called Bcrypt. Well, it's not that new. but it's new-ish to WordPress, and it's the way that your passwords are going to be hashed so that you can have access to your WordPress website. It's pretty interesting. It's a tinfoil hat episode, and I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast once again by Tim Nash, who's feeling a little insecure. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing okay. When you said that, I'd completely forgotten what the name of the show was, yeah. And I was like, am
what?
I?
What?
What am I feeling insecure about? Oh, no.
This show. Yeah. So we're calling this, we have done, calling it Feeling Insecure. Tim is, and hopefully will be in the future, a security expert. WordPress, I guess, is his weapon of choice these days. But I think it's fair to say that your history goes way beyond WordPress. Do you just give us your little bio? Tell us who you are in case people haven't heard this before.
Yeah, so my name's Tim. I think I go with a professional doom speaker.
Oh, I like it.
I work in cybersecurity. If I'm talking to people who wear suits and ties, and WordPress security to anybody else.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for many, many years. I have a background in development. I used to run a development agency. I've also worked for hosting companies. I've done, before that was doing physical penetration testing. So that's breaking into buildings, which is lots of fun.
What? You were actually breaking into actual buildings? Like, literally with, like, hammers and things like that?
No. That's far too noisy. Clipboards work much better.
Gosh, really? So you were trying to gain access to secure locations by hacking the systems that guarded the fences and the walls and the doors and things?
The people. More than any of the other stuff.
Your success? Did you ever get in?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's exciting.
You'll be amazed the number of times a kind receptionist will just let you sit in somebody's office while you're
working. Oh, so the social engineering approach is where you begin, is it? You try to just talk the person around and explain, no, we really should be in this building.
Quite often, you didn't even need to go that far. You just existed. It really does help. I say clipboards are an amazing thing.
I think that sounds really James Bond, Tim. I think that's brilliant.
I don't think, unless he, I don't get the feeling he was very much into writing the report side of things.
Yeah, afterwards there's the written reports to be done. Gosh, I had no idea you did that. There's a whole episode in there. Can we do that one day?
Sure.
Okay. Today, though, we're going to be talking about a bunch of different things. We're going to primarily focus on a piece of content that was created by Patchstack over on their website. We'll get into that. And then, time allowing, we'll get into something dropping in WordPress 6.8, the way that your passwords are being hashed and stored. And then, never know, maybe there's a bit of time for some AI stuff at the end. But let's start where we should begin. So this is the Patchstack State of WordPress Security in 2025 article. I'll put the link in the show notes. But if you Google that, Patchstack State of WordPress Security 2025, and click the link, you'll get a very, very, very long page, which I'm guessing you have read and drawn the conclusions from. So it's over to you, Tim. Tell us what you found out.
I mean, I think it's so worth saying Patchstack do these every year and for the last few years. They're not the only people who do these. I think WordFence, which is another security company, WordPress security company, also published their equivalent. And a couple of the VIP hosting companies, VIP hosting, VIP dev agencies also do their own like statements on the state of WordPress security. It's a very long document. It's full of pretty graphs. It is very much meant for people who are perhaps in either management positions or to give a more generic overview. If you're a deep, hardened techie, what's in here probably won't interest you as much. It's not full of tips and tricks and all that sort of thing. This is very much data and sort of laying out the landscape today. It's also worth emphasizing that Patchstack are a company who's discloses vulnerabilities. They both through themselves, they have their own research team who go and look for vulnerabilities and plugins, but they also provide a mechanism for other people who find vulnerabilities to disclose through Patchstack, and Patchstack will do all the communication with plugin vendors and theme vendors, etc. So they see a lot of the vulnerabilities. and they are responsible for reporting a lot of the vulnerabilities found in the WordPress ecosystem. So their document is really one to look at because it does give you probably the broadest view of what's going on right now.
I think I quite like it for a couple of reasons. One of them, incredibly vacuous, in that it looks nice, which I know is of no consequence at all. But when you're trying to, as a person like me who doesn't have the expertise, the fact that it looks nice keeps me going. So there's that. But also, I can actually read it. They don't tend to. Maybe you probably have a different opinion of this. Maybe it doesn't get into the weeds enough for you, given your background. But for me, it's just the right level of comprehensible English and difficulty, if you know what I mean. Somebody who's inexperienced can draw conclusions from it. Whereas I've definitely been to other websites where, you know, they are really wearing the tinfoil hat and I lose the will to live quite quickly because I simply don't understand. So, yeah.
They get the balance right, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking about prettiness. They have lots of graphs. And one of my favorite features is they've got a button that says download graph as image next to every single one of those graphs.
Yeah, that's nice.
And charts, which is great because if I then want to show a client something and I want to show them the data, I don't have to recreate it. And, you know, it's all branded up with PatchStack so I can give attribution. I really like that feature. On is it too simplistic? Obviously, getting the language of security right is a big problem. And one of the reasons that I like coming on shows like this is to try and express more complicated things in relatively simplistic terms to help people generally, not just keep gatekeeping. Because there's a lot of problems with security around this idea of gatekeeping, that only a few people have this knowledge. And we use our own language and our own terminology, especially if you then also mix in the compliance side and you're suddenly having to learn that a term that you thought meant something means something else in this particular set of ISO standards that you've never heard of.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of easy to forget that is the raison d'etre, really, for this show, that it is taking something basically incomprehensible to the vast majority of humanity, and it gets regurgitated and cycled around in your head many, many times, and you spit it out in entirely comprehensible language. So, yeah, that's what Sometimes. This is about, and I applaud you for doing it, because it's pretty thick. This whole article is basically six areas. One is, a promotional bit at the top for PatchStack, and then we get into the bits and the pieces. But is your intention for this, then, to pick out the top-level items, the bits you found most interesting?
Yeah, there's obviously, this is a huge article. I encourage everybody to read it, but let's aim at some of the big things.
Okay.
And obviously their sort of headline thing is that there's been a massive increase in the number of vulnerabilities found. Now, it's important to remember that just because an increase in vulnerabilities found doesn't mean that things are any less secure. These are vulnerabilities that have been found in WordPress core, WordPress plugins, and WordPress themes and associated stuff. If a block is being delivered by your host, for example, that might be included in here. So while there's an increase in the baseline number of vulnerabilities, and what's more interesting is to look at those types of vulnerabilities that are occurring, and in many ways, to be happy that we're seeing an increase in vulnerabilities being found.
Interesting.
Because that does sort of imply that we're finding more stuff. And therefore, it's getting fixed. And if we're fixing more stuff, what we don't want to see is a big gap between the number of vulnerabilities found and the number of vulnerabilities patched. And if we start seeing that gap growing, that's the thing to worry about more so. So this idea that if we found, so there were 7,966 new security vulnerabilities we found in the WordPress ecosystem in 2024. That's coming from PatchStack. They say that's 22 new vulnerabilities a day. Now, 96% of those were uncovered in plugins, 4% in themes. That's interesting because this is a shift over decades. But it's as we've slowly convinced people that themes should do pretty things, and plugins do functionality, we've seen a significant decrease in the number of vulnerabilities found in themes because they're doing less. So they've got less things to break, effectively. Whereas, so that's great. That doesn't mean your theme, if you've got a theme that's doing lots of things, maybe you've bought that not necessarily, if you bought a theme and you did so through a theme marketplace, and it does lots of things. Say it was, like, I don't know, a job theme, and it came with like a job manager thing attached to it. That's going to have far more of a problem, and it's more likely to have vulnerabilities in it than, say, I don't know, 2025 theme.
Yeah.
Built out of WordPress, which is basically not much more than a theme JSON file, a functions file, and some CSS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to put that down at all, but we're simplifying themes, and consequently we're seeing less vulnerabilities. But if we've got these 7,966 vulnerable plugins, one of the bits of data that's not in the report that would have been really fascinating would be to see how many of these have been patched. Is it 7,900 patches? And we've got 66 unpatched. And the really key number would be to see, okay, what percentage of remain unpatched, and is that going up or down?
Right.
If it's going down, then you can say our ecosystem is in a much better place. And if it's going up, so we've got more plugins percentage-wise remaining unpatched, then we're in a worse place, because our basic, at the moment, our number one way to improve security is to update and keep things patched. But if vulnerabilities are being reported but there's no patch available, then this is becoming more and more of a problem.
Do you think that it's a case here then of there's just more bodies on the ground looking for these things? So in other words, companies like PatchStack, who seem to be growing, I don't actually know if that's true, but I'm going to guess that PatchStack as an organization is growing, that they can deploy more resources, so they just find more things. You know, if you've got a 100 needles in a haystack and one person looking, they'll find some. But if you have 100 people looking in that haystack, they're going to find more than one. And also, it's a curious balance for a company like PatchStack to tread, because you don't want to sort of poison the waterhole, really, do you? At the same time, you want to explain, okay, WordPress has all these things going wrong with it, but at the same time, you don't want to scare everybody away from WordPress, because that's what you do. So let's deal with the first thing first. Do you think we're finding more? Is that what you were saying? We're finding more, yeah, because we're looking harder.
First of all, there is more code to look at.
Yeah.
The plugin ecosystem is growing. So as more code enters the ecosystem, there is more potential places for vulnerabilities to be.
Mm-hmm.
But also there is significantly both more eyes on the code, but also the way we find bugs and the way bugs are getting reported has become easier, more automated, more managed. And so we see this increasing. So I don't actually see that headline number as a scary number.
Great.
You've got to remember how huge the ecosystem is. And a lot of these vulnerabilities, while being reported with high CVSS scores, which is a common vulnerability scoring system, which is designed to allow a system administrator to decide how important a vulnerability is. But that system is the standard system used across all software, including software on your
right.
PC, on a server, a printer software. It covers the whole gamut of things. And consequently, WordPress and any web application gets quite high CVSS scores, which makes it seem that every vulnerability that's reported for WordPress sounds really scary.
Gosh, that is, I hadn't thought of that, yeah.
But the reason why is one of the requirements to decide if something is scary or not, as far as a CVSS score is can it be exploited over a network?
Okay, all right, yeah, okay.
And if it is, then it immediately gets a much higher classification, because it's super scary that if you can manage to do this, not have physical access to the computer, then this is a really scary vulnerability if it was something that affected your PC.
So that's more or less 100% of anything that WordPress has going on with it. Okay.
Exactly. Everything to do with WordPress is over a network.
That is interesting.
The CVSS scores are always significantly higher than what you would actually want to rate the vulnerability as.
From the point of view of somebody coming into the WordPress space, let's say I'm a blue chip company, I've never had a WordPress website before, and I approach a big agency and I tout this number at them, but there were close to 8,000 vulnerabilities last year, which is 22 a day. What the heck? Why are you promoting this? Those numbers really do kind of challenge the assumption that WordPress is secure when you say them like that. But it's nice to hear you play it down a little bit.
Good. I mean, I can't remember how many WordPress plugins are in the repo.
I think it's 60K, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So look, if you've got 8,000 vulnerabilities distributed out amongst at 60K plus, because obviously not every plugin is in the repo, distributed out across all of those, that suddenly turns, if your site has 20 plugins in, then you're maybe talking one or two vulnerabilities over the entire year, depending on your setup.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes me feel more sanguine. That's good. As an owner of a blue chip company, I'm now going to promote WordPress. There we go. Done.
But also, it's worth saying that a lot of these vulnerabilities are relatively minor.
Right.
That doesn't mean and are hard to exploit in a practical way. So a lot of what's happening over the last couple of years is you're seeing a lot more automation and a lot more where a vulnerability has been found in one plugin. The researcher goes, oh, I found this cross-site scripting issue in this plugin. I bet it's in the others. And so they'll go and look for the same vulnerability across and use tooling to be able to check across all the plugins for a similar pattern and go, ah, I've now found it in 50 plugins.
Oh, gosh.
So all right. 50 then get, so we now have, a vulnerability researcher can go from finding a vulnerability in one and having one vulnerability chalked up to their name to suddenly having 50 vulnerabilities chalked up to their name through that one, just look finding it in one in the first place, because they can then go, can I find this pattern elsewhere?
Got it. Say some sort of library or something like that that's being used in a multitude of different ways.
Or just some coding pattern that's being used in some way.
I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting.
So quite often, especially with the low-hanging fruit ones, the very low ones, which tend to be cross-site scripting is overwhelmingly the largest amount of vulnerabilities found.
Because I know that a lot of people will get that, but I think there'll be a proportion listening to this that won't. How do you define a cross-site scripting vulnerability? What does that do? What does it look like?
Well, it can look very limited. It's basically having it in such a way that allows a script to run locally that appears to your Java. I'm going to come up with a better definition. So cross-site scripting is where you would normally have a web application. You might have, let's say, a form, and that form might have an option which lets you put some text in, and you can put some JavaScript in there.
Got it.
And when you submit the form, the JavaScript acts. Now, it's only affecting you as the end user in this case if you submitted the form. So normally you need to be able to trick somebody into submitting something with the extra data to perform the cross-site script to make it meaningful and useful to exploit. But then you can have stored cross-site scripts. Let's say that form gets stored in the database.
Ooh.
And so now it's hiding inside a post, let's say, inside your WordPress table. Now every time somebody else comes to the site and they load that data in, that cross-site scripting attack can occur.
Yeah.
And now we have a problem, because let's say we have a admin, you make your attack, you store your cross-site scripting little script, and then the admin user comes along and they load up a page and go, ooh, that something weird just happened. It flashed for a second. And now as an admin user, that JavaScript was designed to make a REST API request that added a new user.
Yeah.
Or a multitude of things that can happen. So they are scary if they can be exploited in a wider way, whether that's through trickery or whether that's through storing them in a way that it would be represented. They are overwhelmingly the vast majority of the new ones found, because developers are really bad at doing their basic sort of checks and making sure that they are sanitizing and escaping things, which are developer terms for making sure that you check the data going in to the whenever data is submitted by an end user and going, hang on, is there anything naughty in here? Okay, we'll pass it through. And on the other side, any data that you're presenting back to the user going, hey, should this be able to run this? Probably not. We shouldn't be allowing JavaScript. We should only probably be allowing, you know, the B tag or I tag coming back in terms of HTML elements. Now, WordPress has all the key things you need to do safe escaping and sanitization, but it does require a developer to implement that in their code. And it's very easy to forget to escape something. It's very easy to not sanitize something in a database. And overwhelmingly, the vast majority of the vulnerabilities you find could have been picked up with a code sniffer. What's going to be really interesting is next year, we're really going to see the benefits of the WordPress.org plugin checker.
Yes, interesting. So
last year? Yeah, last year.
Yeah, it was last year.
They introduced a plugin. The WordPress.org introduced this plugin checker, which is basically a plugin that you install on your site that you're developing your plugin in, and it would do a lot of the automated checks that you hopefully would already be doing with a coding standard, including a lot of these vulnerability checks that say, hey, you forgot to escape this stuff. Now, before you can submit to WordPress.org your new plugin, that is going to become a requirement that it has to pass the checker. So for new plugins, we're in a much better place. Old plugins, not so much.
Do they get a pass? How does it work with older plugins?
So once you've submitted your plugin, unless there is a reason for it to be reviewed again, there is no review process in terms of updates.
Okay.
Now, I think if you'd told the plugins team a year and a half ago, yeah, we want you to start reviewing changes.
Oh, yeah.
when there was that huge backlog.
There was 90 days worth of backlog.
Yeah, three months worth of backlog. They were going to go, no. But this one addition of having this tool that goes through, provides a load of feedback, including a bunch of security feedback, has changed the posture of new plugins. And you never know. Hopefully we can start talking, well, maybe old plugins need to have updates when they're doing their updates, maybe need to start complying with these standards as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because in many walks of life, we have something equivalent to that, don't we? Like, you know, you can't keep driving your car, in the UK at least, without an annual sort of checkup. We call it an MOT. But there's some prescribed thing in law which says, no, that car is unfit unless you prove otherwise. That's a curious idea. Yeah, okay, sorry. I got sort of sidetracked a bit there. Yep.
Funnily enough, and again, this is something that's referenced in the article, and something we've talked about before. Patchstack is a European-based firm. I'm pretty sure they are entirely European-based. And one of their big pushes for next year, and has been a push for this, is talking about the EU Cyber Resilience Act.
Oh, yeah.
And we spoke about it, but from a UK perspective, in that we have in the UK, we are following through with something very similar with the UK Cyber Security Bill. And part of that is exactly this idea that companies should be making sure that they maintain a certain security standard. And while it's not referred to as an MOT type event, that you should be regularly auditing code and regularly preventing vulnerabilities and regularly being aware of what vulnerabilities were inside your code base and knowing, like having a bill of materials for every part of your website. These are things that are going to become legally required in the EU and then in the UK and presumably in California about 5 years later. In a watered down way, because that's how it goes.
I feel there's a whole new industry about to emerge that will satisfy the needs of these requirements in Europe.
The folks at Patchstack, that's pretty much what they're very much, that's, you might have heard of their vulnerability disclosure program.
I have, yeah, yeah.
Which is a big selling thing for them. That is all to do with this. The language that they use, the terminology, it's all about making sure that you can tick the right boxes so that you can comply with the Cyber Resilience Act in the EU as it comes into law. So there is already a shift. And for myself, I'm also seeing more and more clients who are asking for very specific work done in using language that you're like, I recognize this language. This is definitely coming from a place of I need to tick boxes off because I need to be legally compliant in the next couple of years.
I have a totally random aside question, right? So I'm just going to completely hijack the whole podcast here. So if you're in the UK, we take our car to get this thing, this MOT, and then it goes off to a garage, a mechanic, who is authorized to do the MOT. You know where I'm going. Who authorizes the person that gives the tick box, if you like, the tick? And how do we know that they're credible at what they do? So when you're saying, I've checked this website, as far as I can tell, there's nothing wrong. In your case, I'm just trusting that you know it because I know you. But the people that I don't know, how do I know that their credentials match? And how do I ensure that what they say carries the force of authority, really?
Is always the problem that you're always going to find.
Okay. It's the Wild West.
It is a little bit. But in the UK, we do have industry standard bodies. So weirdly, cybersecurity in the UK at a sort of like government level is handled by an offshoot of GCHQ, which is our one of our main spy agencies.
Yeah.
And they handle a lot of the passing down what the standards for security should be at a government level. As part of that, they have approved programs for penetration testers. And there is an industry body called CREST, which are I hate to call them a pyramid scheme. That's not fair. But they are one of these sort of bodies where if you pay them enough money, you get approved. But they do come with a set of substandards for the actual individual. So as a company, you have to pay to join them. So if you're a big pen testing company, you would be a CREST approved pen testing company. Within that, though, the individual assessors need to have gone through some level of qualification requirements that CREST set out.
Got it.
And they have a set of courses, and you specialize in maybe your incident response team, and you'll go on one of the CREST approved incident response team ones. Web application testing, you might go on one of those courses. So there is that. The problem is the bar to entry for that is quite high, and it is quite an expense for a company to go and become a CREST approved supplier that's out of reach of a lot of the smaller businesses. So for your really big companies, and you'll find it in some government work, and some big companies will say, we need this to be a CREST-approved pen test through a CREST-approved pen tester. Then that's the route you go. For the smaller companies, that's possibly going to come back and they're going to go, I'm sorry, did you just say £300,000?
Oh, at that kind of level. Gosh, okay.
Okay. Wow. I don't think I can afford that to get that from my one pen test a year. I'll come. Prices vary massively, but you can easily spend $500,000.
It's eye-watering money.
Yeah, which is understandable if you have eye-watering stakes. If you are a company that is running an e-commerce site and you have £500-700 million going through, which the scary thing is there are Shopify sites with that sort of income going through their books, and there are WooCommerce sites at that sort of level as well. Then you probably do want to go through. And your insurance company are going to say, we want to see that, you know, before we underwrite all of this, we genuinely want to see how secure everything is.
Yeah.
And so you'll find that a lot of these sort of tests are done through those higher levels. The other thing is, if it's talking of insurance and that leads to accounting, is that there is a separate sort of standard for testing, and that's something you might have heard of somebody being SOC 2 compliant.
That I have, yeah, but I don't know what it means. Yeah,
so SOC 2 is a security compliance standard written by accountants.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
long
literally
and
the I've forgotten what the agency. It's like the American Accountancy Association.
Okay,
came up with a level of security. But one of the things that makes SOC 2 a different type of compliance than, say, something like ISO 27001 is that when you do the assessment, you do that over a 3 to 12 month period. So it's rather, so normally if I go along and I do a, like if I'm doing a audit or site review, I will take that snapshot in time. What you present me or what at the given moment is what I'm reviewing. Whereas SOC 2 is all about showing that you have all your policies in place. It has a set of things that you meet, standards you need to meet, but then you have to show that that's happening over a prolonged period, over that 12-month period. And so the assessment is over a much longer period. So when you see particularly hosting companies saying they are SOC 2 compliant, they actually have gone through a hell of a lot of work to get that. Whether that makes them any more secure, I don't know.
No, and but at least they have given it thought. It may be that everything was bulletproof to begin with.
And it's also remembering that compliance is as much about the paperwork as it is about the actual, in fact, it's more about the paperwork. And it ultimately, SOC 2, because it's written by accountants, it's more about risk and risk management than it is about security. But it's, so there is some sort of point where you can say, oh, okay, I do want to go for a specific sort of level of tester, and that is available to you. Just comes with that price point.
Yeah, so there is a there. There is something. There are things. There are certificates. There are compliance requirements. So if you go to a vendor of security solutions who will check your plugin theme, whatever it may be in the WordPress space, there are things that you can ask to see. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I completely derailed the conversation there. Back to PatchStack's annual report. Where did we get to?
We were just saying cross-site scripting remains the most vulnerable, widespread vulnerability.
Okay.
One of the interesting things was that I found surprising was the way they really highlight more than 500,000 websites infected in 2024. And I was like, wow, we're doing such a great job. That's so low.
Oh, that's intriguing. I thought that was so high.
That's really, really low. And then I read the line, Security alone observed over 500,000 websites.
Oh.
Right. One company had seen 500,000 websites infected.
Yeah, that sounds like such a breathtakingly large amount to me.
That's a tiny amount.
Yeah, I've no real window into how many websites there are.
Again, and it's like, if you think about it just for a second, like, how many WordPress websites are there?
Yes, that's the number I'm missing, but it must be hundreds
millions. Yeah. Big, scary, sort of numbers that we go, you know, it's powering anywhere between 30 and 42% of the web, depending on how you're thinking about it. And it's like, that's huge numbers of sites, most of which are not running up-to-date versions of WordPress.
No.
So the idea that only 500,000 had been hacked and they were saying this with some sort of authority was like, that can't. I mean, I probably see maybe 20 hacked sites a month. Just me.
Just you.
People coming
to
me.
Yeah.
Coming to me saying, we've got sites hacked. I've had clients come to me in the last 2 months. It's been a bit unfair. I've had two clients come to me, and each of them had over 500 sites each hacked.
Wow.
So I've seen in the last month or two, over 1,000 sites.
Okay. That gives it a lot more context.
So when I worked for a hosting company, we assumed a certain percentage of the network. So the entire number of sites we had on the across the hosting company, we assumed a certain percentage were hacked at any one time. We had to make that as a baseline assumption that there was always some site on our hosting that was hacked. And when you start thinking of it like that, and then you scale that up from small hosting companies to the giant hosting companies, 500,000 seems like this like tiny number. That's a blip.
But also, your being sanguine was kind of upended by realizing it was just one report from one company.
Yeah. Okay. And it's because security, the way that they're probably, when they're saying we've observed this, that's probably ones that are actively being seen. And quite a lot of vulnerable sites that have been compromised, we don't necessarily immediately see anything.
Yeah.
They don't all just suddenly have Viagra pill websites taking over the front page.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Something's going on in the background, lurking, sitting there, waiting for a moment, or just doing something ever so benign that you'll never see.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of the times, it's worth emphasizing that while WordPress is the gateway in, most sort of bad actors are not necessarily looking to hack the WordPress site. They're looking for the server resources. Whether that is to send email, use it for crypto mining, use it to attack other sites.
Got it.
All of this sort of thing. So there's a lot of the stuff we don't see. When we do see it on the front end, it is nearly always to do with like SEO spam. Sometimes you see like takedown pages. Occasionally you see card stealers, so card skimming.
Right.
Exploits. They're relatively rare. They still very much happen, but the vast majority is SEO spam. And again, this is something that's highlighted in the Patch Stack report, and that data is coming from Securi, and that's what they basically saw. Securi's data includes a total of 422,000 incidents related to SEO spam. So of that 500,000 that they saw, overwhelmingly, most of that was spam pages being spun up in the sites.
So just in an endeavor to drive traffic to another property.
Exactly.
So nothing, and I'm doing air quotes here, nothing harmful in that sense. Just, well, you know what I mean? It's kind of benign. At least they're not trying to get money out of your bank account and things like that.
I probably didn't phrase that very well.
But.
And they, in this particular case, they are not even interested in driving traffic you directly to the traffic. They're interested in getting Google to drive traffic upwards.
Yeah.
The next sort of version and the next biggest category that Securi saw that were front-facing were malicious redirects, where they are literally trying to drive you to the endpoint. So you as the end user might go on the website and go, oh, how did I end up on this porn website? I swear I didn't, Mum.
Yeah.
Sort of like thing. where you've just suddenly been redirected to something or other. And then the final group that the Securi were seeing a lot of on the front end were effectively unwanted ads. And I think actually they also put inside that, they put web defacement separate. So unwanted ads where hackers basically just put adverts all over the site.
I seem so 1990s, frankly, Tim.
I mean, and the scary thing is, a lot of people who are site owners are going to be slightly tech savvy, might have an ad blocker on. Might take them a very long time to realize that their site is being served adverts.
That's a really interesting point.
Because who's going to tell you?
No.
Unless someone sends a random comment saying,
right,
God, I really don't like the way that you've put all those adverts on trying to make money off me.
Gosh, what a thought. Yeah, that's a good point. So just somewhere in amongst the text is a banner ad of some kind, and it looks like, well, because that's what all the newspapers do, right? They just have banner ads.
I mean,
all
if
over
you've
the place.
Gone on any of the major websites without, scrolling on my phone, this is the quickest way to get me to not use my phone for like doom scrolling is to like, God, how many adverts are there on these things?
Yeah.
So, unwanted adverts, Securi out of that 500,000 said that 16,274 incidents were linked to these unwanted ones. And of those, like one of the biggest ad networks for doing this was something called ProPush, which I'll be honest, I've never come across,
but I'm not really into
that space. But apparently it's really easy to get adverts running with them, if you can get adverts running with them on another person's website.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you get a massive audience real quick.
My understanding is to, get Google adverts to run is quite hard, so this is probably good.
Because Google do the work of discovering that this is not where it should be, that kind of thing.
And you have to like authorize, you have to say, this is my site. And you also have to have a certain amount of traffic. Maybe ProPush does as well. But that
you'd imagine it's not your traffic. On some level, it's in ProPush's interest to have all this happening, which is a bizarre thing to say, but you understand my meaning.
Then the final category was website defacement. So I think this is where most people think of a site being hacked. Most people think of this as like that traditional like anonymous style green screen takeovers and bits. But in reality, of the ones that Security saw, that accounted for just 8,452 out of that 500.
Yeah, I mean, that's very small, isn't it? So basically, that's a tiny proportion, yeah.
But all of this represents just a fraction.
Right.
And that's just what they're seeing,
yeah.
Not what's happening behind the scenes. So what they're not seeing is the sending out, using your server to send out tens of thousands of emails. What they're not seeing is the DDoS attacks. So it is an odd thing for me to sit there and go, wow.
You're happy for the briefest moment and yep. then dug in. That's really interesting, though. There's a ton of information in there, and a lot of that really fascinating. And it sent us on lots of little blind alleys as well, where you explained things like the CSV scores and the certification requirements. So that was fascinating. Okay, where are we moving to next?
Well, I think we've got one last tiny little bit in PatchStack, and then I thought we'd go and do some fun encryption and math.
Nice. Let's do that.
So the last section I did want to cover was, again, another big bold headline, which is WordPress security needs new strategies. And it's an interesting, if we go right back at the beginning and I said, oh, well, one of the nice things about this is I don't really care about the how many vulnerabilities there are. I care about how many are patched.
Okay.
And the time to patching. So this section highlights that relying on updates is not enough to be safe. And the statement is, in 2024, 33% of vulnerabilities were not fixed in time for public disclosure. Now, that does mean that nearly 8,000, there's a fair chunk of those 8,000 that apparently didn't get a patch before they were announced as being there.
What's the period of announcement there? Is it like 90 days or something like that?
It will depend on how the researchers and everybody's communicating.
Okay, so it's not, there's not an industry standard around that.
No, but and sometimes researchers can be quite, I am going to release this tomorrow.
Why do they do that? Is there some sort of fame element to that? Do they get something out of it?
There is a little bit of that. There's okay. a little bit of I'm telling you this and then I'm publishing it. It depends on what the person wants out
right.
of it. There is a little bit of blackmail associated with that as well.
Okay.
If you don't engage with me, I'm going to get this published and you're going to look bad.
Yes, which I guess in some level is an effective strategy, but not necessarily good for the end users.
And potentially if it is actually combined with true blackmail, if you don't engage with me, I'm going to tell the world about this and tell you them and make you look bad. But if you give me some money, I'll give you 90 days.
God, now, humans can be terrible.
Absolutely clear. That's not something that somebody like PatchStack would do. That's what an individual bad actor would
okay,
do.
Okay, again, sorry, I derailed it. But so there's no fixed industry standard on that, but it would be nice if there was and it was a reasonable amount of time. But nevertheless...
For a lot of these, they will have been given plenty of time.
Okay, so 33%
not fixed.
Wow.
What we don't get is whether in the document is whether this is up or down over the previous year, which is a shame because that would be really the interesting figure. That's the one that would tell us whether we're winning or succeeding. But also, it doesn't indicate the classifications. Now, if 100% of the highest priority vulnerabilities were patched, and 70% of the really, really low ones that can't be easily exploited weren't patched within that period, that's great. If we're actually in a position where across all sort of the levels of scariness, all of them were at roughly a third, that's not good. And what I suspect is when we were to dig into the data, we are going to find that the higher risk vulnerabilities did have a higher percentage of those being patched before that vulnerability was being announced. And that one of the reasons for this particular figure is because of the low-hanging fruit where somebody has gone and found 500 plugins all have the same error, but it is really hard to exploit and it's really low. But they are technically a vulnerability and therefore classified and therefore have been pushed out. One of the things I do for my clients and one of the things that's a mainstay of my job is reading the vulnerability reports and deciding if they're vulnerability reports, which sounds really bad because somebody like PatchStack will publish something and I'll look at it and go, okay, that is technically a vulnerability. There is a problem, but I'm not going to ask my client to stand on one leg, pat their tummy and their, you know, and their head at the same time while singing the national anthem of a small country. So therefore, this can't be exploited. The risk is so low. We don't need to worry about this. We'll put it over in the
it's
corner.
It's a theoritical exploitation, yeah. But lot of dominoes need to fall for it to
actually
happen.
Exactly. Versus, right. If I type that URL in, I get full control of your WordPress website.
Okay,
we'll prioritize that.
Quick, yeah. Ring the bells, fire.
Yep. Yeah. That's important. We fix that straight away. And providing, it's strange how that, for me, is a service. That's one of the services that I offer, is translating vulnerability reports, which I think also is damning on vulnerability reports and the fact we are getting vulnerability fatigue, where we report all of these low issues, and it's not helped by when we're talking about the CVSS scores, which, to their credit, PatchStack do try to avoid by introducing their own priority scoring system. But if we're getting lots of low vulnerabilities, people see these figures, they give up and go, oh no, it's all over well. So the thing that I want to say more than anything is, rely on updates. Updates are, they might not be enough, but they are still critical.
Yeah, it's interesting language that they use, isn't it? Yeah, they've said relying on updates is not enough to be safe. But I suppose the sort of subheading to that would be, but it's quite a bit.
Yeah. But, you know, even if you took that 33% figure, and bear in mind, that 33% figure is across all plugins and there might have been a plugin that had 1,000 vulnerabilities.
Oh.
I didn't respond to any of them.
Yeah, and a plugin that's vulnerable because, I don't know, it's been abandoned for 2 years or something.
All of these, a lot of these not fixed will be abandoned. They will also be very low in like 10, 50 people are using them.
Okay, so that's interesting. So one in that score, one vulnerability counts as a plugin, but if that plugin has one install, it still counts as one.
Yeah.
Whereas if another plugin has, I don't know, 100,000 users, 200,000, a million users, that also counts as one.
Yes.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
The risk assessment, and therefore what scoring you give them, doesn't change based on the number of users. That doesn't have the impact.
That's an interesting
when
metric,
when it comes to something like CVSS, it's all about your individual. So that said, if you have that one plugin and you're that one person who's got it installed, it's almost irrelevant because it's there. It is a good thing to remind you, though, is go check what plugins you've got installed and are they abandoned? Have they been receiving updates? Are you getting notifications? And if you're getting notifications that you've got plugins that have vulnerabilities and they are not, there doesn't appear to be an update, that's something to be really looking at. If there's been several updates since that vulnerability was announced,
That's a good sign.
Makes me think, okay, maybe they've done some risk assessment, they've thought about this, they've decided this is low-hanging fruit. Still worth checking, because there still might be, they might have decided, no, actually, we just like insecure code. But it's unlikely. It's more likely that they've taken the decision that this is a reason that they don't necessarily need this.
Love that. No, we love insecure code. That's what we do.
We might get to talk about AI in a bit. It loves insecure code. So, yeah, I would still advocate automatic updates. And if not automatic updates, updating as soon as possible. It is one of the best benefits. The fallback to this, WAFs do help, but generic WAF services, whether that's something that's a WordPress plugin, whether that's something like Cloudflare, whether that's something your host got, will again help against certain classes of code. But we've been saying for the last 10 plus years that a WAF only fixes certain things and it can't get everything. So you combine these two, that's a good starting way. Now, at this point, we should emphasize PatchStack's main product is selling what it refers to as virtual patching, which is that basically it identifies vulnerabilities and it puts its own little patch in to protect you. So it's no shocker, really, that the claim for the best way to fix this from a company that does virtual patching is to actually, do virtual patching. This is their,
that, use that's, what they got. Yeah.
That's not a surprise. Whether that's the right route or not, very much up for today. But they definitely, that's the route they want to go on. I did, however, think that it was quite funny that they have it. They have a quote from Ryan McHugh, who is the director of product that Humor made, and the quote is, "PatchStack is like CrowdStrike, but for websites."
I see that.
Now, I don't think CrowdStrike, in the popular opinion, it has a really good, you know, it's probably known best for taking out most Windows computers for a short period of time.
Yes, I remember. Yeah.
It's not something I would be putting as my advertising slogan. PatchStack is like a thing that broke the web.
Okay. Yeah. So you'd be reaching out and helping them with their PR. Should we move on from that then?
Have we
done the PatchStack thing? I'll just drop the URL once more, or rather the title of the post, just in case you want to get it. But it will be in the show notes. But it's go for Google and then go PatchStack. State of WordPress security in 2025. No doubt that'll get you the result, but if not, it will be dropped into the show notes. Right, time allowing, I don't know that we will get to the AI, in all honesty, this time, but don't worry, because the AI conversation is going nowhere. We can do that on episode 4. But let's move on to the honestly super interesting, I think, bit about hashing versus encryption and what's coming in WordPress 6.8, because I understand on a very, very, very high level what's going on here, but the weeds of it are kind of interesting to me as well. So what is shipping in 6.8, WordPress 6.8?
I feel we just need to put a disclaimer. We are not going to go into the math.
Oh, thank goodness. Right.
We'll stop several
high levels. I'm going to put my crayons and pencil away.
Yeah. So WordPress 6.8, it has got possibly the biggest change to the underlying code base that we've had for some time in WordPress.
Oh, okay.
And it's probably one of the most significant changes in terms of potential things that might break, though they are very confident that they will not, which I'm really pleased at. And the amount of testing they've been doing is fantastic. But WordPress 6.8 is going to change from using encrypt to bcrypt for password hashing. Now, you're probably there going, okay, I understood the word password amongst that.
Right, exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the way that WordPress and most web applications work is that when you put in your password at the very beginning when you set up the account, WordPress goes, oh, you've given me a password. I probably shouldn't store that in the database in plain text.
Good idea.
Based on what we've been talking about for most of the show, there's quite a high chance that someone might at some point have access to that data.
Yes.
Based on the number of sites that get hacked. So let's not store that in plain text. Let's store that in a way that a bad actor, if they got the password, couldn't do anything with it. Now, the way we do that is through hashing. Now, hashing and encryption have very similar concepts, but are very different things. And you probably hear the words interchangeably occasionally, and they definitely cannot be used interchangeably. So hashing is a way where I start off with some data, in our case a password, and I pass it through an algorithm, and at the end of it, I get some data out that looks like gibberish. It's a big, long string, which I can then store, and I can store that safely. Now, if I take that string, it's very, very difficult for me to then reverse that to work out what the original response was.
Why is it difficult to do that?
Because it's a big, long string, and I have to work out how I could get from the original through.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm saying there is, why don't you know the way back? Like, where is that bit stored?
There, it's not.
Ooh.
It's never stored. So the big, long string just exists.
Okay.
So when we check our password, what we're not doing is taking the big long string and going backwards. When someone comes and logs in, they puts in their username and password. The next step is that WordPress goes into the user's table in the database and finds the associated user and returns the big long string. Now, we've now got a password and the big long string. Obviously, we can't directly compare them. So what we do is we take the password that you submitted and hash that.
Oh, and check for a match.
The big long string matches the big long string, these two strings match, we know that the password you submitted is the same password that you originally stored.
Got it.
So at no point do we store or look compare the two passwords. We're comparing the two hash strings.
Okay, so I have a further question. What's to stop a hacker knowing what the process of hashing will output? How is it not possible that they could, you know, let's say that was, okay, my ignorance is going to come out in spades here, but here we go. What's to stop somebody stealing the thing which conducts the hashing? So in other words, that they themselves could go, no, okay, as I'm speaking it, it makes sense. Okay, carry on. I've got it.
Okay. Well, the answer is they can and do. Whenever you hear about password dumps, these are not of hashes.
But that's
these
a brute force thing, right? There's no way of sort of circumventing that process. You just have to guess.
You might have this big list of hashes and you know how it was hashed.
Yeah.
You even know the algorithm that was used. And in this case, the big change from 6.8 to is going from mCrypt to bcrypt, which is just changing the algorithm used to hash those passwords.
Yeah.
And bcrypt is a significantly harder algorithm to crack than mCrypt.
So if I was in that process and I wanted to crack that password, I would have to just go through a process of try this, doesn't work, try this, doesn't work, try this. So it's the security comes from the length of time and inconvenience and cost that is associated with just going through that process until I find a match. No, you're shaking your head.
You are right.
Oh.
It's the more than inconvenience, it is the sheer time.
It's like thousands and millions of years, this kind of level.
Let's imagine just for a second, if I had a password that was a character length of one, well, and you knew that my password was a character length of one, then you have, you know, and you knew it was purely just letters.
Okay, I've got 52 possibilities. Right.
Now, if we add in numbers and special characters, that's increased significantly. Now, if we're getting, non-Latin language characters in, we've increased it even more. That's for one. So you as a brute force have to go through and try each one of those in combinations. Let's say that you can return that in a fraction of a second. You've got a big, beefy computer that can do this in a fraction of a second. Cool. Now we've had two characters.
Oh boy, it's logarithmic, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So if you were to see this in a graph, you'd see this curve shooting up into the sky, getting steeper and steeper.
Okay, then it somehow the more characters you add, it's like the length of time it will take for the universe to sort of equalize its energy. It's just heat death of the universe amounts of time.
And over the years, we have slowly but surely convinced people that starting with 6 characters minimum, that's a bit rubbish. 8 characters minimum, that's a bit rubbish. 16 characters minimum, I'm using a password manager, and it allows me to have 32 characters in a random string. Okay, good luck trying to break that through brute forcing.
Right.
Most people's passwords today fail not because somebody is brute forcing by guessing the string, the random character string. What they do is they get known passwords and check against those.
Right. So things that have appeared somehow they get hold of my password for this thing that goes into a database which gets circulated amongst all these people. So they just try those ones.
Exactly. So if your email address turns up in a password database dump and
it
turns out that, you know, you used the password myprincess123.
What the heck?
I know.
Say those words.
And then you decided that you really couldn't cope with multiple passwords. So you use myprincess123 on every site you've ever logged into that required you to put in a password.
Yeah.
That it's very easy to work out what your password is on your WordPress site because you go, oh, it's myprincess123. However, even if you were to just slightly manipulate that password, it would be significantly harder. If someone was targeting you, they might go, well, okay, Nathan's a creature of habit, myprincess1234 sort of thing. They'll just work out.
This is how my mind works.
But nobody's really targeting you as an individual.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Most of the time, this is automated. They'll try passwords that they know with combinations of emails that they know. They'll also look for common passwords that turn up. The reality is, if you have an uncommon password and you make them unique and long, it's really, really difficult to break into these things.
Okay. Now, I've got to ask then, if it's so difficult, why are we changing it?
Because, like all things in life, we started off with things like SHA-1, and we were like, this is really secure and sophisticated. And there aren't giant supercomputers that can work backwards. So up until now, we've worked on the assumption you cannot go backwards from this. But there are some, it is a mathematical algorithm that does to do that, to make it so that it stays the same, you get the same response each time you hash it. Over time, we started with like SHA-1s and older hashing algorithms. And we said, they can't be, if you throw enough sheer power at this problem, you can work out, you can break backwards. So you don't need the original password to work it back. Okay,
so hold on, just to understand that. In some cases, it's possible not just by brute force to figure it out. There is, like in the example of SHA-1, there was an algorithmic way of getting it right 100% of the time, no guesswork work required.
But you need a significant computing power to do
that. But still, some people have that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And
so it's broken. The minute somebody's got it, it's useless to everybody.
Potentially. And so over time, we started at MD5, we went to SHA-1. We've now reached the point where theoretically, mcrypt could potentially be broken. And theoretically, so could bcrypt. But each time we do this, the big difference between bcrypt and mcrypt is it's the adoption of bcrypt hardens the security by increasing the computational cost of cracking even more. So we're basically making this harder and harder and harder, require more computation just to even to be able to do this,
okay,
to break these algorithms. So we're at this switch is theoretical. Your website is in no danger of being, you're having your passwords cracked except through common guessing route right now, but there is a potential, and we are living in an age where there is a lot of compute power, and we could see this being broken. So
right.
The move.
So, I guess if somebody's figured out a theoretical, I don't know, maybe that's based upon the amount of compute power on planet Earth or something along those lines, then you've drawn a straight line between, well, this is an idea, to, well, there's a horizon in which that is going to happen. And Moore's law, it just, this stuff happens, right? Give it enough time. If you don't change the mcrypt to the bcrypt, I don't know what that horizon is. Maybe it's 1 year, 10 years, 20 years. The point is, it's getting closer every day that passes. You have to move in order to just stay ahead of that theoretical horizon.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is why we're making the move. Now, there's a lot of people who will go, well, hang on, bcrypt's already old hat. And that we already have other standards, and the industry standards closer to Argonne and Argonne 2, which are a whole new set of algorithms and ways to do hashing. And the answer is yes, but also no, because you have to go with the lowest common denominator that is available across the most hosts possible.
Got it. Okay, so we're constrained.
We're
constrained by the hardware people have actually
everywhere.
Got available. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So every host and pretty much every host who is running some sort of Linux system that is from the last umpty years, and I can't, off the top of my head, I don't know what that is, but it is a long time. We're not talking like in the last 2 years. So if you've got an OS that's been running, that's a Linux OS that's been running for the last 5-10 years, it will have bcrypt enabled. It might not have Argonne enabled. The version of PHP you're using might not have Argonne enabled. So there is a practical benefit thing where we're like, okay, we can't necessarily rely that Argonne will be there. So you have to use the best, most widely available, and that bcrypt.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
There have been plenty of people in the WordPress space who have been using bcrypt and Argonne for years.
but they know that their hardware can accommodate that. So,
yeah. So right. There is a the people who do the Roots theme and Bedrock and all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. They've had they basically had a plugin that allows you to replace the PHP pass library, which is what WordPress uses, with the default PHP library, which is one of those sad ironies that at one point WordPress was ahead of the game, and we brought in a library called PHP pass that supported at the time mcrypt, and it was really fancy. But since then, PHP itself built its own hashing tools inside the PHP language, which were supported these other things, including bcrypt and argon. So the Roots theme had a plugin that allowed you to take that and use, and it basically did a swap of PHP pass and used the default PHP. Myself, I've had a plugin for years that does a similar thing, that actually a fork of the Roots, and that code base has then been used by other people, including hosts. So there's multiple hosts, managed hosting companies, that are using bcrypt under the hood for theirs, managed storing the passwords. And there are several managed hosting companies that are being using argon. So from their perspective, they've already done this. They've done all the hard work. The only problem you do get is when you move from one algorithm to another, because you do need to support both while you're doing the migration.
Oh, so do we have both in WordPress 6.8, and at some point move over?
We have far worse than that at the moment.
Oh dear.
You see, WordPress didn't start with mcrypt. We started with MD5.
Okay, that's a familiar old name.
Yes, but this also means you can do really fun things, like just randomly insert. MD5 is very easy to generate and very easy to see. If you want to ever get into a WordPress site, you could just create an MD5 string and shove it in the password field, and then WordPress will go, oh, that must be the password.
Oh.
Because it doesn't know. It goes, I'll use the old one, and then I'll rehash it for you to use the current standard.
Yeah, that does sound good.
And we're going to be in exactly the same situation for this. Basically, the first time you log in, it's going to try and decrypt. They're going to do the hash using bcrypt and go, that didn't work. I'll try and hash it using mcrypt and see if it matches the string. Oh, it does. Right, I'll take the password you've given me. So I'm going to store that in memory for a little bit, and then I will rehash it and insert it in with the bcrypt version back in to let you do the updates. So for a little bit of time, it's hanging around in memory. Both in there.
Okay.
Going through.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Just by the way, the article that we're linking to here, where this is all announced, is on make.wordpress.org. It's called WordPress 6.8 Will Use bcrypt for Password Hashing. And this is the definition. John Blackburn put this together on the 17th of February. And to me, it's the definition of tinfoil hat. This is a strap in and enjoy it, because it contains such wonderful lines as, in addition, application passwords, user password reset keys, personal data request keys, and the recovery mode key will switch from using PHP pass to cryptographically secure but fast Blake 2B hashing algorithm via Sodium. Now, at this point, I'm sure that makes sense to you, but I'm so grateful that there are people like you and John Blackburn who actually understand what's going on.
I mean, that is a lot of words to say we're switching over to using better algorithms.
Lovely. All the words. Ultimately. All the words. It's good. It's very good.
A couple of things that people might want to know is, if you do support Argon on your server, Argon 2, you can just add a filter. So you'll be able to filter through this and say, actually, I want to use password Argon 2. If you do use a completely different password hashing algorithm and setup, you can still do that. This is all replacing the drop-in code base as it is now. So you can use exactly the same way that you could do previously to swap out, which is what people like Roots team were doing anyway. You can still do that with this. So if you've got something that's already existing for you, this won't automatically overwrite it, but going forward, this will be the default standard. It brings us up in line with most industry applications for web applications, and this is a positive thing.
Good. Well, there we go. We're going to end it on a positive note. We have run out of time, sadly. We will move the AI vibe coding interesting conversation to the next one, I think, because, what are we at now? An hour and 10 minutes. I feel that that's enough security for more or less anybody except you. Because when we finish this call, you're probably going to get right on with a load more. But as always, you've made the impenetrable understandable, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Tim. I really, really enjoy chatting to you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that. If you did, head to wpbuilds.com, search for this episode. You're going to be able to find it by searching for episode number 415, and leave us a comment there. We really appreciate it when folk like you leave a comment on the WordPress commenting system. That would be really, really nice. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WP Builds. We're also joined this week by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. This podcast was also made possible by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that truly is all that we've got time for. Well, not quite. I've got a couple of things to say, and they are as follows. Why not join us for the This Week in WordPress show? We do that live every Monday, wpbuilds.com/live. Come and join in the commentary from all over the world. We are typically represented in the comments by people from literally every time zone. It's a lot of fun. You might enjoy it, and it's very lighthearted. Once more, wpbuilds.com/live. I'll be joined by three other panelists, and we'll have a chat about the WordPress news from this week. Also, don't forget, we'll have another podcast episode dropping on Thursday. Find us in your podcast player of choice by searching for WP Builds. And if you want to advertise, that's /advertise as well. Okay, I'm going to fade in some cheesy music and say, stay safe. Have a good week. Bye-bye for now.